Welcome to the award-winning Disrupt Education Podcast, a podcast that explores the latest innovations and trends in the world of education. I'm your host, Peter Hostrasser, along with Allie Privet.
We're both educators. Okay, one of us is a former educator, and we were tired of the status quo and wanted to create a space where we could have conversations that aren't always in the public eye. Join us as we talk to other disruptors, educators, researchers, and thought leaders who are pushing the boundaries and challenging the way we were taught.
We're thrilled you're here to be part of a not-so-underground movement to disrupt and amplify the good pieces in education. Whether you're a teacher, a parent, or a lifelong learner, there's a story for everyone on Disrupt Education. We're here each week to bring you stories from all over the globe of people doing education differently.
So buckle your seatbelt, get on the disruptor plane as we climb to altitude before letting this episode free fall straight to your ears.
Hey, it's Peter Hostrasser here. And hey, I want to tell you something about how I am actually disrupting education. Yeah, I'm moving forward with portfolios on spikeview.com. If you head over to spikeview.com, basically what we're teaching our students to do is actually to create a skills-based portfolio around their interests, their passions, and what they're good at. It's called the strength-based approach. So basically what we do is we build up our students and have them understand what they're good at and what they're interested in by the time they leave our high school. But it doesn't stop there. It's a K through gray. So if you want your students to continue to build their strengths in this day and age where resumes are dying, and to show more and more about who they are, what they do, and they actually control all the data behind it, guess what? SpikeView is the place for you. Head over to spikeview.com, check it out. Let me know if you need anything, because I tell you what, I have used this with my own family and my students. Check out spikeview.com today. Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. Allie Privet is here with me. I'm Peter Hostrasser. Allie, how are things going?
Things are well, and I'm really excited to jump into this episode, because lately on the podcast, we've been talking to students, we've been talking about the trades education and kind of like these, I want to say, mechanical or didactic pieces in the educational system. And even our students, you know, they talk about the books or the classes they enjoy and the experience. And, you know, you can be heavy on like what's missing in school, but I think a key piece, and this is exactly why we have our guest today, that gets talked about, but it sometimes gets talked around, is the relationship piece in education and how that can influence a community and students and teachers and everyone. And so I think this episode is going to be really special for those who are like, okay, well, I don't know. I think of it as like the heart of education. It's like, we're all people, we all have relationships. And so I'm just really excited to dive in.
Ditto. And I have actually worked with this person, or I've been to a few, of his, workshops. Amazing. I'm just going to leave How Men Cry out there. And I just love the name of that. We have Dexter Spitz with us today. And we're going to be diving into, well, not only how men cry, but social emotional work, real social emotional work. Cause I feel like, and we'll dive down into this, in education, where it becomes sort of a checkbox. I think we miss a lot. So want to introduce Dexter Spitz. He's with us today. Hi, Dexter. How's it going, man?
I am doing well. Glad to be here today with you. Finally getting you on the phone, Peter.
I know. Very busy. So we're very humbled to have you. And when this comes out, it's in the beginning of a school year, which is exactly where we wanted it, because this is a great place to really start to figure out, as educators, or anybody for in general, is how to create these relationships. And first it starts with you, but wanted to have you give you, you have a lot of experience and quite a journey so far. And wanted to give you an opportunity here to give people, you know, a little bit about yourself. We'll get further into your journey, but what are you doing right now? And a little bit of maybe a mini background of how you got there.
So as far as what I'm doing right now, I focus on men's mental health work through a context of really just trying to change narratives around how we talk about mental health in general. There's a lot of stigma out there, and I know that I personally have had issues and, you know, struggles with either being depressed or just different things that have really kind of hit me over the years with what motivated me to go on this journey. So some of my background, I have a background in STEM. A lot of people don't know that I'm a nerd a little bit. And then I also have been a performer in spoken word, hip hop music, public speaking, just a whole bunch of different realms and spaces. And I try to kind of put a lot of those things together now with the work that I do with men's health.
One of the things that really struck me is the exact name, How Men Cry. Especially as a person who grew up in the basically the 70s and 80s, I'm going to go ahead and date myself there. You know, it was just like, suck it up, be a man. Yeah. All these, you know, labels that were put on people. And in the education system, it was definitely if you weren't a certain way as a male or identified as a male in a school, it was tough. It was yeah. And I grew up in a small rural town. You know, as you've evolved into this and really created these things around How Men Cry, what are some of the things that you would see yourself in your own educational journey that now, if you could go back, what were some of the identifiers that are like, wait a minute, if I did this or learned this earlier? And we'll just start there.
Well, it kind of touches on where you all introed, you know, just this kind of personal connection that we have, even more so than what we're learning sometimes, like to kind of strike on what you said. I definitely dealt with bullying at different points in life, you know, different points of being teased, ridiculed, criticized for not fitting into whatever kind of boxes that were maybe set up for me. And when you think about it, it doesn't really have too much to do with what you're actually supposed to be learning in school, or there are all these social things as far as like the taught type of material. But, you know, we also do have to learn how to socially engage, interact, and all of those types of things. And if I could go back to maybe talk to who I was at a younger age or something, I probably would have just tried to really encourage just me having more sense of confidence in who I was and what I really, really felt. Because I think sometimes those impacts and, you know, hey, you need to be like this, maybe getting bullied in certain ways, they can kind of push and suppress maybe the best version of ourselves. You know, so if there's anything I would say to little Dexter, it would just be a little kind of pat on the back and just say, be as weird as you want to be.
I love that, because as someone who had varied interests in school and for young people who, you know, don't quote unquote fit into a box, it's just like a challenging time already, like navigating so many things and expectations. And so for students, right, that's really important to, you know, like be your authentic weird, you know, self is always like a great message. I'm curious on your thoughts for the educational system, you know, it, like teachers or admin or just the adults in the building, like what are we missing in terms of, you know, mental health and social emotional learning that you see as an opportunity for maybe schools to be their weird selves? I don't know, like not just young people. Any thoughts around that?
So first and foremost, I will just say, from knowing a few teachers in general, your job is way harder than what I can even put into words in this podcast. So first, I would say a thank you on that, because from going into the classroom, even just a few times to do different, you know, speaking and other things like that, I can understand how complicated it can be, one, to kind of reach and just bridge in all of these spaces. And I think for kids and students in general, you're figures of, you know, authority, at least in some type of way. And there's a natural pushing back that's also happening at a lot of ages too. So one is, I don't imagine that it would be simple to kind of start to bridge that gap. I guess if there is leniency that can be given, maybe on some of the rules in terms of, like, I know that sometimes there are concepts that come from higher up that kind of get put on teachers and then they have to act within certain bounds. But what I would say is the best responses that I've ever gotten from, you know, working from youth, if I've done a show, if I've performed, is just to show my vulnerable self when I've performed and when I've talked about the, you know, mistakes that I've made, the struggles that I've had with mental health or whatever type of life difficulties, the students have responded so much better, because then there's just, I can take off a bit of the armor and then they kind of do the same themselves. And then I feel like the conversation can happen a little bit better. But again, I say that with a grain of salt, because I also understand, not a grain of salt, but I say that with a big, I know that this is also challenging on the, you know, to also have that figure of, hey, you're gonna have to kind of listen to me and turn in this work too. So
yeah, I appreciate that. And yes, it is a very complicated thing. Especially we have a lot of educators, parents, stakeholders in the education game who listen to the podcast. And this is why I'm really excited to, you know, have these conversations with you. And we know, like, there is no one, like, you know, checkbox that's going to work for everybody and such. I will tell you what's interesting in my experiences. And one of the things that I struggle with in my entrepreneurship classes and my career planning courses are typically, if I'm going to statistically say the highest point of the difficulty in connecting and trying to help somebody gain confidence is a sophomore or a junior boy. And to have them open up and have those conversations or be, open in front of just me, which I'm very open. I show a lot of my failures. I ask the students questions. I will say, what can I do? You know, these types of things. And I think that's where it gets frustrating. So the question is, and this is a big kind of question, is it possible to teach confidence, or is it a two-way street in your experiences? If you could read the mind of a sophomore or a junior boy in a class, or anybody for that general, for that matter, is it possible to teach confidence, or what are some strategies that maybe a teacher that you have seen or yourself have seen in a classroom, outside of just being, you know, I'm going to be open in front of you and show you who I am?
Yeah. So the first part, one, I think that's a great thing to first show that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. The second thing is for sure the context that there may be there are complicated circumstances going on with every single, you know, person that you're sitting down with, even if they have an on paper perfectly fine life. It's just a complicated time of finding out the sense of who you are. I think at that age range, I mean, we're all still trying to figure out who we are to some extent. A huge tool, if it's not utilized already, I would say I'm a big fan of meditation and mindfulness practices. And the reason being is because I find it really effective to allow people the time and the moments to slow down and to kind of sit with the self a bit more, because it gives us easier and better time to process, and then also to maybe see what are the true parts of who we are, and then maybe what's a little bit of ego, what's a little bit of, hey, I'm presenting. And it's not necessarily that you have to teach all of those concepts and other things like that. But what was a big distinction that I had to learn, even for me growing up as a man, was having a genuine confidence and then having a ego-based presented confidence. And there's like a world of difference, and they can both look the same, but I can almost like call it pretty clearly now. Like the more and more that I work with men, I can see it almost immediately, where it's like, okay, this person is really in touch with self and they're truly believing it, opposed to I'm just presenting a bravado. And I think a lot of youth are in that stage sometimes of still trying to figure out what that deeper sense of confidence is. So if there's any tool, meditation, mindfulness practices, there's a realm of things that you can deepen there. But I would say maybe adding in some of that with some pointed questions could maybe do a lot.
The way you're describing this, you know, with developing an inner self, being vulnerable, makes me think about how school and my experience with teachers and the relationship with students and even like teachers to admin or admin to stakeholders, like any level of those, is I often felt the school system was trying to present a perfect self. You know, like this is the route, you know, this is like, don't be vulnerable, you know, pretend almost, it's like unspoken, but, you know, pretend everything's fine and fluid and it works and there's no cracks in the system. And really it's much messier than kind of the facade almost that it is. And we talk about that oftentimes on the podcast about like how that system doesn't really work for many different intricacies. So I'm curious on, you know, what are ways in the work that you've done with companies or organizations that, you know, we can kind of let go of that. I think there's so much power in presenting like who you are and developing that sense of self, but it's got to be a culture, right? Like, it can't be at all these levels where you are almost trying to pretend to be perfect. So any thoughts or recommendations for, you know, the school as a system to kind of reach those goals of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that immediately comes to mind is, so the unfortunate thing a lot of times is that it has to come from leadership. It kind of has to come from the top. It has to come from, you know, and as far as a shifting of a culture within a place. However, some of what we do with, you know, companies or other places that we've come in to speak or do workshops is to kind of bring in the space of like, hey, it's okay to take off some of this armor. Like usually when I go into companies, I'll do a combination of, I'll do spoken word, meditation, journaling, and reflection, kind of all in one sitting. And what is fascinating about it is when you give people the space and kind of take off some of the defenses of how they need to present, you would be surprised what comes out. Because I know a lot of times it can be like, oh, I don't want to share this with my coworker. I don't know how the, and I guess where I try to focus or how I've been trying to reframe it in terms of companies is like, we keep trying to separate who we are, like our mind, our body, and what we do. We keep trying to put them into as tidy of a box as possible, and they bleed over all the time, which then bleeds over into why things maybe don't work as best as they could, you know, within a school, within a company, within a system. And I guess just when I think of how to try to resolve that is, I think even from the top, we have to get to the point of just saying, we do have these issues or said issues, or we're still trying to figure this thing out. Being comfortable enough to say, we are trying to figure this out, I feel like is way better than just trying to present as if you have it together. And that's probably my biggest criticism, what I would say in general about most of the company cultures that I'm not a huge fan of, is just like, this company's run like this and we do like this, or, you know, schools run like this and we do, and this, and it's just like, who are we fooling? It doesn't work. Nobody's life even works like that. So what are we even talking about, guys? So that's the, so I don't know if that was more advice as much as it was just a tangent, but, but it really is, that I would say that's something we do try to shift. We do it workshop by workshop, but I think you hit the nail on the head that, like, company culture wise, it has to be something that becomes, you know, accepted.
I feel that as well in the education world. Definitely, it is super top down in many of the cultures that I've, you know, I've worked with. And it's hard. They always call it like turning the, you know, the ship around, or even turning it 2 degrees is very difficult. So I feel that, and thank you for sharing that, because that's spot on. There is a lot, and back me up on this, Allie, ego in education. There's a lot of ego there, yeah. Especially in the top down way. I mean, there's some great examples where it doesn't happen, but I personally have been part of organizations where, you know, trauma was happening to me and my close circle, and it was not tolerated in my workspace. That was a tough one. I mean, that was one place where I had to kind of like leave. But I think, you know, in attaching that to why people leave, you know, the education system, we have great educators, we have great people, great community members who are now abandoning the education system. Can you speak to that? Like, I know I'm just kind of throwing that out there, sure. But where does that come into play? Because I know for me, I have left cultures of school cultures because of some trauma and a lot of different, you know, egos that occur, including mine. I mean, I've had my own challenges with ego. So, yeah. I just wanted to ask your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would. The retention in spaces where some of the hardest people work being done is definitely an issue. You see it within schools, you see it within the space of mental health a lot of times, like a lot of the places where people need the most care and assistance, the systems that are around them a lot of times do not support a healthy doing of that job. And then eventually people get burnt out and they shift away. And what I try to articulate, at least to companies or entities that we'll work with, is just that if it's bottom line focus, or if it's bottom line driven, that you want a better, you know, company performance, or better whatever it is performance, because even within school systems, there's still money, there's still other things flowing around, right? But the interesting thing is that, and there is some data, I can't necessarily quote the numbers off the top of my head, but there is some data that essentially people leaving and shifting from your companies and, you know, maybe taking benefits, maybe taking severance, this and that, being unhappy, not even doing the work that they could be doing because they're not satisfied. It's like, you actually bleed more money from just having really unsatisfied people than you do from just kind of, you know, maybe running just a more cared about ship. And in particular, I know Gen Z and millennials, I don't have the exact stat, but the likelihood of just leaving for companies in general, not caring about their mental health, is like considerably high, even than higher than, you know, generations before. So as far as many of the top down approach, and as difficult as it may be, because that comes with a whole nother set of circumstances, is like, the people need the care and support to even do the jobs well. And that's where I would say my heart, you know, goes out to a lot of teachers or folks that work within the mental health space, because I mean, you can see it, like close friends, therapists that I know, social workers that I know, there's just a different look of like getting off of work and it's just gone. Like there's like no gas left in the tank, and then trying to get up and trying to, you know, show up your best tomorrow for people who you may really care about. You know, so it puts the teachers into very tough positions.
So I have a kind of maybe a spicy take or a question for you on this topic. And it's around the same kind of idea of retention and but also like, you know, students, I mean, parents can make their voices heard by where they send their students to school and, you know, graduation rates and kind of like how involved people are in the school system. But my thought is around this idea of schools care more about test scores and data, right? Numbers, or, you know, how the measure of success of students graduating, from what I currently see printed and I read about and what gets shared and from any level, is, you know, how many students are going to college, you know, what's our graduation rate, what are ACT scores, what are our AP scores, you know, what reading exam, like lexicon, our level are we at, etc. And I just think there are other measures of success. So like, how can schools, you know, shift and look at like the person or like the whole, like, and I'm sure you see this in your work with organizations, right? Like companies who just care about the bottom line profit margins and they give no care to like their employees and like that person. So, you know, how can we look at learning as, you know, a person growing and not like a numerical value on a piece of paper? And like, you know, what would you say to either leaders or students who want to kind of advocate for themselves? You know, like if you wanted to do a bottom up movement, you know, from either side, what would you kind of say to, you know, school systems that kind of put their eggs in the data basket?
Yeah, I was actually just looking at this article a couple of days ago, and I don't like to quote data in case I'm wrong about the actual numbers. I'm like, don't even nitpick me. But it was a fascinating article that was talking about how some of the top performing CEOs in the Fortune 500 companies have no college degree. Some of the top performing ones. And what I would say from just understanding the human experience, and I mean, we see it all the time, where sometimes we will marvel at these figures within society that have gone unconventional ways and have done amazing things. And quite a few of them sometimes will say, I did it without, they'll, you know, rub it in the face. I did it without school. I did it without this. I did it without that. And I'm not saying that there's not value and utility within schooling, but it's just to say that, hey, maybe somebody's way of learning doesn't necessarily look the way that you think it should look, but that doesn't mean that it's not valuable. And I think it's Einstein, I think, who said, like, not everything that is measurable, let me not mess this up. Not everything that is measurable is important, and not everything that's not measurable is not important. And I think that's one of the tricky things. And I, you know, have a background in STEM where it's like, okay, I get that you want to have numbers to kind of present whatever is going on, but that is to satiate a human feel and need or desire to have stuff within a tidy box. And I guess that's part of what I'm kind of trying to break down with some of my work. What we talk about is just that we're not tidy boxes. Nothing about us as humans. I mean, it's like comically hilarious to me when you kind of zoom out and look back at, we're going to be the, so yeah. So from the, you know, leadership standpoint, it's like, yes, the numbers are important. I'm not a huge fan. I was not actually a great test taker. Something kind of crazy, actually. I almost didn't graduate high school because of just a bunch of different issues going on family-wise and, you know, personal things going on, all these different conflicts, some of the things I'm speaking on today. So I almost didn't graduate. I had about 30 missed days of school in my last semester. Had to serve out detention and Saturday school and a bunch of other stuff to even be able to walk the stage. Ended up with a 2.19 GPA. And since then, as far as through just a school context alone, graduated from one of the top material science engineering schools within the country and nation, and have worked with all types of companies and other things, built businesses from my own. It's like, so, and I'm not saying that to like ego drive, I'm just saying it to say there were a lot of times that I could have been written off as far as numbers in those periods, you know, of life. And there were plenty of people who did, but there were also just a few great teachers and a few people that still to this day's advice, you know, that'll resonate within my head and push me forward.
Nice. I like that. Actually, you know what's interesting, and this is kind of where I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about pandemic and change, and as well as technology in your hand and social media. You know, surprisingly, 30 days in a last semester, or even yeah, in a last semester, is not too uncommon anymore. And you know, there's a lot of different reasons for that. I mean, I think that you know, they have sort of put mental health days in. And I think that's a good thing if people understand how to really use them. But I also see students who will take that day and sit in their room and be on TikTok all day long, you know, and is that really what a mental health day should be? As of this recording, I believe Allie will be off of technology for an entire month of July. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to kind of connect those things and possibly some pandemic things that you have seen. Is technology, is social media a part of a bigger challenge when it comes to mental health? Is there some thoughts that you have on that? And I feel like there was a rise of it, in distraction of our own selves, in the pandemic. What are your thoughts on that?
So definitely, I would say the pandemic for sure pushed us even more towards content. We were already headed there, but a statement that from a meditation standpoint, and there's a concept of like craving, like what we go to when we crave for whatever feeling to be satiated or to, you know, dissociate from the moment, whatever it may be. If we picked up any other substance or item as much as we picked up our phone, people would be like, hey, you might want to slow down on that fill in the blank, you know, any other time. So I think it's actually one of the most undiagnosed issues when it comes to mental health use. And the other tricky thing with social media in particular is that I use the, you know, example of the you're getting social stimulation, especially on social media in particular. So back in the day, you know, that could have been like, hey, Ali like caught a deer outside, brought it back to the group, and everybody was like, oh man, she got a deer. And that was your moment of like dopamine hit and celebration. It's like, cool. That is happening at a remarkably rapid pace, excuse me, a remarkably rapid pace with social media, where you are getting the social stimulation, some good, some bad, or otherwise, but remarkably quickly. And I think it's what makes it so, you know, we're addicted because it's such a quick stimulation. And like I spend a lot of time camping and, you know, hiking and stuff. And one of the reasons is to separate and to kind of get away from it. And although I have a social media presence, I'll let you all in on a note that I don't even keep social media on my phone. And if I do ever have to actually sign in or post something or do whatever else that it may be, I'll sign in for a moment and I delete it right back off. And that's a lot of personal choice, but from the mental health standpoint in general, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't have the data to back, but I'm pretty sure that it was just causing negative impacts on me personally. So I can only imagine, to take it back to the first part of what you're saying, like a young person who's trying to figure their life out at a difficult point already, then having this means of attachment, and then there's kind of like the FOMO thing because everybody else is doing it too, and then are you on this platform, are you on that? It's really unfortunate, and I don't quite have other than trying to you know, celebrate meditation and mindfulness and bring it to people more. That's a tricky one to solve, especially for the youth right now.
Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of shifts in my own life in the past year that have been around getting off of online and being more in nature, and the freedom that comes from that. But if you have, I think just bringing awareness to this issue and the consequences and effects that social media and being online in any kind of capacity attached to a screen, your phone, right? Like what you said there with, like, if there was any other substance that you were using or any kind of activity you're doing as much as checking your phone, like it would be a real problem. But it's like society and kind of like accepted globally that, the device can just be attached to at all times. It can interrupt anything, any moment, any time, and it's just quote unquote accepted. And I think we kind of embraced it because of the pandemic, but I personally see and have had more and more conversations with young people, with friends, with family about the importance of detaching, being in activities that you're just in real time, no screens, no devices. And I hadn't ever really felt that personally until the last year. But I think I'm sure in the work that you do, you see organizations, companies, people feeling that way. And I do think it's part of the social, emotional health, mental health issue in schools. I don't know about all schools and all teachers. I know that at the school I was at, teachers were allowed to have their own kind of cell phone screen policy, and they were supported by administration, but sometimes that is not the case. Mm. There are school districts where you can't have kids put their phone away, like, you know, it would be like a safety issue or something like that. And then there are schools that all the kids put their phones in a safe, basically, at the beginning of the day, and they aren't. But I'm curious, if you have any additional thoughts on, you know, what screens and kind of this environment does to mental health, yeah. And just from the work that you do, and ways maybe to encourage people to think about, you know, their usage or continued thoughts around that topic.
I have seen some data in terms of promoting people feeling anxious and not being able to kind of get settled just from the overuse with phones. And I think it's just too much input for us to kind of go back to the reference of, you know, hiking in the woods or camping or things. I try to take my mind back to, okay, if I wasn't in this constructed society with all of these things around, what would my body be used to? And there's actually a really great book called Forest Bathing. The author's name is leaving my mind now, but essentially he talks about just this practice. It's called Shinrin Yoku, which in Japan is just this art of taking time, of essentially just walking within these sacred forests. And he looks at the scientific benefits of actually just being present within nature and taking moments to essentially be with the self, be around the earth and other things. And I think of that in contrast of, okay, so normally maybe we were sitting around, maybe you had a fire, maybe you were seeing a little stimulation of animals, of lights, of trees, whatever it may be, in contrast to how you may interact with the world now, where within about you can wake up, and if the first thing you do is touch your phone and go to start scrolling, you're probably going to get more input in 30 minutes of doing that than what you would have gotten for hours, if not longer, just from sitting in the environments that our bodies, you know, grew in. So when I think of it now, it's like it's somewhat obvious of like, yeah, maybe this is a little too much. And I think we sometimes can feel like we have a grasp on what's going on, but this is the first time in human history that we have had this much input at once. There hasn't been another period in time where we had devices where it was like, boom, you can get all of it. So, so some of the tools that I use, for instance, when doing workshops or other things, is I'll have people shut their phones off. A lot of the times when I do hikes on our men's retreats, I will have everybody hike in silence. So we'll do maybe like a two-part hike where in the first half, we'll all hike in silence and they'll just walk and be in nature, essentially. And then we'll open up the floor for conversation and discussion. And you would be surprised how much more open people become when they just have a moment to stop and be and let stuff process. And so for the last retreat that we had, it was about 25 guys or so with us. All walked in silence going. And on the way back, you would have thought they were a bunch of middle school kids because I let them talk and nobody would shut up. But it was in a way of like bonding, and this is what I do. And that, you know, so I think the slowing down, the creation of silence, and just giving the space to even let people witness it, and even trying to have, you know, them maybe go to their body a bit to see, after I finish scrolling, do I really feel any more calm, or do I just feel anxious and like screen, you know, screen burned out, eyes glazed over kind of feel.
You know, going fast is unfortunately a part of secondary education where Allie and I, Allie has taught, I'm in still, you know, a lot of the schools have 7-8 periods a day. They're extremely quick, 45 minutes to 50 minutes. I always go back to Office Space, the movie, where I have eight bosses, Bob. It's a lot. And, there's been places where, you know, authors like Todd Rose would say, you know, if business was run like a school, it would shut down after 6 months, because it's just too fast, too much. And then now we have kids peeling away because they're like detaching. It's just too much. So then they're going to go get more on their phones, or they're going to talk to other students during the day, et cetera, through technology, just shutting down. And then along with that comes emotions, who they are, confidence becomes shattered, et cetera. So this is kind of the big question. If there could be a Dexter Spitz, a How Men Cry school, and I know we're a nation of systems, and you know, it's just the way it is right now, but if you could design your own educational system, or a school, specifically, let's just say, I mean, maybe let's just not even label what age group, and I'll let you kind of figure that one out, but what would it look like? What would learning look like in that system?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in a funny kind of way, I've mentally been working on that concept for a long time, more so for like more than likely for men's work or just mental health work in general. And it would definitely incorporate probably meditation as being one of the first things. I know I keep centering back to that, but so much comes from how we step into the world. And I've really been deepening my personal practice over the past like 4 years or so, which has made crazy differences, and there's health benefits, all this other stuff. But it would definitely incorporate that. I do understand sometimes that you have to have some system or some kind of push or drive to people. I don't think that that's necessarily the worst thing. But I would teach probably about half of, actually, I wouldn't even say half, probably about 20% of theory and about the other 80% of people just doing and just trying things as much as possible, because a lot of times we can learn better, or I would say just mix up the pathways of how we present things. If it's audio, if it's video, if it's just really trying to give a more rounded, you know, view to how people learn and to incorporate some of those differences. And then there was something else that had just come to mind. It just drifted. But essentially, I would try to. That was the other thing, the big thing. Actual functional life skills, like budgeting. Like, hey, here are principles that have been shown from how we are better in relationship. And then this is how we can actually practice those things, because I get that it's important to teach from background for things and theories. But there are also just this huge part of life that isn't as measurable again, but it's how are you in a relationship? A lot of the work that I started with Howl Men Cry was from taking a really honest look at myself to say, I'm really bad at this, or I'm really in bad spaces, you know, within this, or I'm really bad with substances or with depression, just all these other things. And I definitely could have used, you know, a better set of skills to arm me for what I'm actually going to be doing in life. So I would say I would try to incorporate that as much as possible. And probably martial arts, because I also like martial arts. So
love that. Love
collectivity
that.
Collectivity
in
there.
Yeah.
Some, right. Yeah. Or I see a lot more with it actually now, even in Chicago, like community gardens, things that allow people to get into nature. Just this more multi-sensory approach of what our lives really end up being. Because if there's any criticism that I would say that probably bothers me the most, even for youth and kids, it's like, hey, go through this whole rapid pace process, and then by 18 years old you're supposed to know what your life trajectory is going to look like and the career that you want to do and this and that. And I'm like, did you know? Maybe a few people maybe knew that at 18, but for the most of us, I'm like, did you really? You were super clear on that. I'm like, I couldn't figure out anything at 18. So
I hear that. Awesome. So, you know, we're coming to our end of time. So I always want to ask Allie for your final thoughts, and obviously Dexter, anything else that we're missing, and we'll get your contact information. But Allie, any final thoughts or questions?
There are a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
That's such a great conversation. The piece that I kept thinking about as you were talking is just giving space for silence and to kind of reconnect with the world, and like the earth and outside the school system. It's almost like it's like too caged into a building and lights, and it's almost like it's a stage of performance, and it's not necessarily a space to like figure out your sense of self, right? Which is what you started with, and building confidence when there isn't time or space to do that type of work in the current system that we have. And I think that's a real shame, because when we interviewed students recently, their answers of like what would make the school system better was really around relationships and developing those. And I think maybe they didn't vocalize it this way, but like the relationship you have with yourself impacts every other relationship you have with others. And I think schools have a long way to go with working on not just the check boxes and the tests you have to take and the standards you have to meet, but who are you as a person? What do you need to work on? Where do you need to grow? Like, because that's going to impact how you approach others in the world and the space, and combining that with being outside and tuning out really the noises that come at you frankly, at like 7 o'clock in the morning, right? Like it's too quick up. So that kind of a culture is gonna require really strong leadership and and community to want to build something like that. I think it's worth building, and it's worth building earlier, not just like after school, because there are great companies and organizations that do want to promote and more balanced environments. And so I think that school systems are wildly imbalanced in that area, and so there have to be approaches to kind of work through it, because I think if you do start your day with some kind of meditation or practice of silence and trying to like, understand who you are, you then will have the space to learn and to kind of take in so much more than just this constant barrage of you start, you wake up and it's go, 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 go until you fall asleep. And then that's the minimal rest that your brain has from all the dopamine you've been hitting it all day, or cortisol, or all of that. So.
One thing if I would that I would say as well is I do understand too that this is not a like easy fix. Like I understand that one, I'm speaking from the outside in. Two, I understand the complexity, even for individuals and leadership, the complexity and multitude of one leading anything. So if there's anything that I would extend back as far as grace is that leading something, usually there's even more factors than what everybody can even see from the standpoint of being on the receiving end of someone who's leading something is like, so like you said, there's a long way to go, possibly. But I think having conversations like this in general can maybe help it. But it's definitely not a like easy route, no matter how you cut and slice it.
I mean, coming into a new school year and thinking about, different ways that I can be a person who is an ally for a student to really kind of connect with themselves, because I think that's super important. I know it's super important because if there's not a good foundation of that, they're not ready to receive or work with any message or any learning, or it's severely, slowed down. I know we'll have a couple of things to break out of this, Dexter, that you've shared. I want to give a moment to have everybody, when people can connect with you. How can people connect with you? How men cry. I do know that you do great work, and working with not only business but education systems, people in the learning world will definitely give even more of what you've gave today. So, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, so the easiest way to find us is so that's going to be at our website, howmencry.com. So that's HOWMENCRY. Look at that, I can still spell. Spell check has ruined me. But then my name, ironically, Dexter Spitz is spelled without the vowel, so it's DXTR Spitz, and that's pretty much on any of the social media platforms. And to reach out and contact, most of the pages will have contact pages or anything. And we have a really great team that kind of works on things with us. So if you're ever interested in finding some collaboration, or you just want to say, hey, I really like this piece you did, or you want to talk trash or criticize, whatever it is, I'm here for it all. So but yeah, I just want to say thank you as well, for the platform and discussion, and also just to all of the teachers out there. I have a better understanding of how complicated that role is. So I do just want to give like a pat on the back for sticking it out and really pouring into these youths. And it does make a huge difference, within their lives sometimes, whether we can see it now or later. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for being here and sharing your expertise. How Men Cry. We'll put all the connection information in the notes of this podcast. For Allie Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Disrupt Education. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Ali Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college, campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.